Welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. We got a new provincial budget come out. We've got all kinds of different things going on in the world of politics these days. We've got the NDP leadership race that we've been covering fairly thoroughly here on the show. But with all of that stuff going on, it's easy for other things to potentially not get the attention that they maybe should. We're going to go back and we're going to circle back and we're going to have a conversation about the way that the disabled community is being treated and some of the obstacles that the disabled community is potentially facing over the next little bit. To do that, we're joined again by advocate and vocalist Don Slater. Don, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I just unplugged my headset. Give me a second. A little bit of a klutz.
That's okay. So Don, let's sort of, I mean, first of all, I love the new backdrop. It's got texture. It looks like one of those little banquet wavy things. I'm glad the clock's still here though.
Yeah. Well, it looked a lot better before it became unpinned on that side. You know, I'm not a technical person, as you can tell with, sheets.
Well, that's okay.
Sheet music. Yes. Sheets. No. Okay.
So let's sort of, you know, there's been a lot that's been going on. We've got the provincial budget, we've got the NDP leadership race. And one of the things that we know happens is when we have major events going on, it's very, very easy for, things to sort of fall through the cracks. So you've been constantly doing a lot of work on advocacy for the disabled community. What are sort of the things that are on your radar right now?
Well, one of the major issues right now is the Canadian Disability Benefit. And the idea, it's an act to reduce poverty, not to end poverty, but to reduce poverty. So our community is hoping that it's going to be substantial enough to really relieve the pain. The biggest problem I'm facing right now is the federal government isn't really revealing a lot of information on that benefit. They're developing it behind closed doors. So the nothing without us or nothing about us without us meme is not really being fulfilled by the government. Now, that doesn't say they're not doing a good job behind the scenes. I think this benefit is very altruistic. The problem is with recent inflation, it's really exacerbated the straits that the disabled people are in. And it's hurt if when it hurts the healthy people, like when it really starts impacting them, you know that there's a profound impact on the disabled community. So while that benefit is altruistic, because of the way the economy's gone and the way the government has managed the economy, that benefit is now more of a crisis benefit. With the lack of affordable housing, which is a government issue, disabled people are spending 2/3 of their budget just to have a roof over their head. So how they're getting by, I don't know. You know, how I'm getting by, I don't know. But it's not a fun life. There's no joy in being disabled, you know. You need support from your community and other people to really have a life of well-being. Otherwise, you're in the doldrums for sure. Do you want me to keep going? I don't want to talk too much.
No, fill your boots, sir.
Yeah. I think I've heard rumors from the Canadian Disability Benefit, and I am working with other advocates, and I'll give a shout out to Sabrina, Rabia, and Jan, who are all doing their best to bring a positive impact to the community. What I've heard about the Canadian Disability Benefit so far is it'll come into force this June, and then they'll have up to a year after that to fund it. So it could be as late as June 2025, and let's hope not. Sorry, like I said, my brain doesn't work as well as it used to, so forgive
me. Sir.
You know, it's sort of like throwing a life preserver off a boat. But it's out of reach of the person that's got their hands sticking out of the water. You know, they can't, or being a lifeguard saying, I'll come back and rescue you after lunch. You know, it's, you don't want to delay a benefit that's intended to help people, no matter what the cost. I talked to you before this meeting about affordability and the pain that not investing in the community creates. Like if you have a lack of affordable housing, then people can't afford rent. If they can't afford rent, they can't afford to invest their dollars in the community. Like just simply going out to eat would be a thing that would keep local businesses going. They can't afford to start a business. They can't afford to have employees. They can't even afford to have children. All these things are trickle down, and we heard the word trickle down before. But now we're getting trickle down poverty. And I think the disabled community is the canary in the coal mine. What happens to us will eventually happen to everybody else. And that's why it's so important to protect the most vulnerable. If you protect the most vulnerable, you're protecting everyone. If you let them fall, who's the next to fall? So anyway, I will let you ask your insightful questions so I don't go all over the place. So go ahead, Nate.
Okay.
Feel free.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I know last time we talked there was some concern about how the provincial government was going to respond to the Canadian Disability Benefit. I'm curious if you've heard if there's any sort of increased clarity over that, because one of the concerns that was voiced was the idea that you have people who are getting provincial disability benefits and like Aish, for example. And all of a sudden the federal government comes in and says, we're going to give an extra $500. I'm making numbers up. But let's say $500 for the sake of math. There were a lot of people who were concerned that one of the things that the provincial government might do would be very similar to what they've done with other programs, where they will say, ah, $500, that sounds great. We're just going to claw that back on the Aish. And so the net increase in income for disabled people in poverty doesn't happen. Have you heard anything more on that?
I haven't. I've tried to reach out to Minister Nixon. Getting through his staff is very difficult. It seems like there's gatekeepers that surround him. As you've known in the past, I haven't said anything bad about the man. I've tried to. I find it difficult to get through his office because a lot of the MLAs in Alberta are saying, well, this is a federal issue, right? That really annoys the heck out of me because there's disabled people in every riding. What they need to know, the MLAs can distribute information. We have a lot of information to give to MLAs. So when the staff is protecting their MLA, really difficult. To answer your question, I have heard that Minister Nixon isn't interested in clawing back the federal benefit. And I've also heard that if any province does claw back the federal benefit, then the federal benefit will stop coming from the federal government, which is really a good thing. So, but the federal government can't really tell provinces how to spend their money, and that's the real issue, right? But they could reduce the social transfer in regard. But really, the big issue is that you shouldn't think that the benefits, even though the Alberta will say that it's the most generous benefit in Alberta or most generous benefit in Canada, it's generous compared to the extreme poverty that other provinces allow their citizens to be in, but it's not generous in terms of where we're at in costs. And you shouldn't be taking out of the collection plate when the collection plate doesn't have enough in it. You shouldn't, deny any other benefit to the disabled community when they're living in poverty. Like you're living in absolute poverty, but you're getting an extra $500 and we're going to take it away because we believe what we're giving you is enough. It's not enough. So I'm sorry. I feel really sort of a little bit like this today. As you know, I have cancer and it's just. I'm not
No.
sure I'm coming across as too cogent, so
No,
I
you're doing
hope I
fine,
am.
sir. You're doing just fine.
Okay.
One of the other areas that I wanted to touch on with you, and this kind of goes towards the idea of, let's go with unintended consequences. We're seeing the Alberta provincial government, as well as many other provincial governments, having a national temper tantrum over the carbon tax and saying that the carbon tax should be paused. Because affordability. But the flip side of that, and we were talking about this a little bit before we got to the interview proper, but the flip side of that is for people who are making lots of money, those are the people that the carbon tax is the impacts, the costs of the carbon tax are really being felt the most. But for people who are in poverty, who are getting the full refund, to do anything to threaten that rebate potentially has a significant impact on how much money they're going to be bringing in or getting access to every 3 months or so. I'm wondering if you can talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, well, the carbon tax is a really easy thing to talk about for politicians because they can create fear in their supporters. They can create anger because it's not really well understood. The carbon tax is a Pigouvian tax, which means that it doesn't generate any revenue for the government. What they've collected, they return to the community. So they're really getting the carbon tax from the large producers like the refineries and those that are extremely wealthy. Everybody else on at a lower level of income is going to receive more money back than they pay. But the federal liberals have not done a good job with the messaging, and the conservatives have done a very good job with the fear mongering. People, I guess they have a tendency to want to be angry about things, especially when they don't understand them. They're looking for reasons to be angry, but you have to remember that the carbon tax was a conservative idea. Instead of cap and trade, they thought the carbon tax would be a better idea, and it is working well. I wish politicians wouldn't play with it, misinformation. It doesn't serve anybody. It gets them elected. It gets them votes. But you know, this is the difference between being a politician and a public servant. Are you doing it for yourself? Are you doing it for the community? Perhaps the conservatives feel that they can do the job so much better, and therefore convincing their voters to vote for them based on misinformation is a good idea. But I really wish they wouldn't do that because disabled people do need that benefit because it's sort of like they fall behind, they fall behind, they fall behind. And then the carbon tax lets them get a little bit, not up, not get an upper hand, but they fall behind less quickly, you know. They can go out and buy some food, all the vegetables and all the good things they need. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what you believe about the carbon tax or carbon pricing or how to deal with it. We've seen in Alberta the consequences of climate change. If I get one more year of smoke, it's going to drive me crazy. You know, I'm sure that nobody else appreciates it either. So that's my opinion on the carbon tax. Would you like to ask me any other questions about it? I'd like to expand on that if you like, but
Well, just like to me, the fascinating piece of it is that and I don't want to diminish the affordability crisis for people who aren't in poverty, because there's no question that things have gotten more expensive for everyone and people have less disposable income, and that sucks. But to me, there's an element of privilege in being able to bitch about the carbon tax, because if you're one of those people who is not getting a net gain on the carbon tax, which is the overwhelming majority of people, to be clear. But if you're one of those people that's not getting a net gain on the carbon tax and you're angry about that, I can understand why you'd be angry about that. But there's also, to me, this like, okay, well, yes, maybe I make enough that I'm not making money on the carbon tax, but then I look at the people who are most afflicted by poverty, like the disabled community, and I kind of go, but that's the price I pay for participating in society. And I'm just curious, like, do you think that there should be more conversation about the idea that it's not just about you, it's about a functioning society? Like, I know that I pay more taxes for sure than you. And I'm totally okay with that because that's the price you pay for having a functional society. Because if you don't, then things will get bad enough that it will eventually impact you in a negative way. What would you say? Let me position the question this way. What would you say to people who are pissed off about the carbon tax and the fact that they're maybe spending $100, $200, $300 more a year than what they're getting back? And with the context of there's boatloads of people in poverty for whom the carbon tax rebate can make a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot there. Okay. I
I'm
think
trying
the
to give you lots
biggest,
to work with.
yeah, well, of course, we can go back to Socrates and Plato and Mills and John Rawls, and they all talk about the value of the social contract. And what the social contract does is it says you can live in avarice, you can have as much property as you want, and law will protect you, and it will protect your property as long as you care for the impoverished. Now, the idea is that if you don't allow people to live in absolute poverty, they're not going to come after your things. I think the libertarians are starting to promote the idea of it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. But that's really the state of nature. And if you shove society to that state, then everything decays from top to bottom. When inequality widens, violent crime widens. When society starts to decay, it's not a pleasant society to live in. But aside from the social contract and all the wisdom of all the philosophers that came before us, it should people should feel good about contributing to society, and they should feel good about helping out those in need. But I think people have really been trained in the last 40 years, since people like Reagan, that everything they earn is theirs to have. The idea of being good to your fellow man, I think people are sort of curling up into a little ball and trying to protect themselves. And God knows that if the middle class are feeling the pressure, and I know they're feeling the pressure, and I know it's hard for them to say, like, I want to give to others. It's an easy thing to say, and it's a nice way to think, but when the grocery bills come in and you're a little bit short in the middle class, it's hard to look at anything that costs you money. But just imagine what the disabled community is going through. At the same time, most people are getting more money back than they pay, right? And the Liberal government has to do a better job at in its messaging to make people understand that. I think it might have been Carnegie that said, if you can afford to pay the taxes, you should pay the taxes. But that's again a philosophy. What is our society being trained to think? Are they being trained to think that we live in a state of nature and every man for himself? Or are they being trained to believe in society? The one thing I will mention that, yes, in the wild, the weak are killed and eaten, but the fat and slow and the lion with 400 deer doesn't survive for very long either, because all the lions come after them. So there are things to be enjoyed in the social contract.
As you were talking there, what kind of struck me was if you go with the laws of nature piece in almost any sort of nature environment, I'm thinking of like primates and stuff. You've got that apex leader who's the one in charge right up until the younger one comes in and goes, "You're not in charge no more," and then usually it goes very, very badly. Or the one what was in charge, they lose all of their things. They maybe end up being deadish. It's a very primal system, and I think that one of the big benefits of the social contract that you were talking about there is the fact that you don't have to worry about that. You can have your things, and you don't have to worry about people coming in just taking them away because they like them. And there's, I think a lot of the focus on social contract often gets placed on, but I have to, I don't want to give money to the poor people. I want my jet ski. And there's not a lot of conversation on, okay, but do you get what happens if you don't?
Well, the thing is the consequences of don't really haven't hit people yet, but we do see a lot of gated communities where people are trying to live and keep the others out, right? We see police forces that are acting as protection forces down in the United States. we see the social contract falling apart down there, right? You have to go through tough times. Pendulum swings both ways, right? It swings to having times where you're living in avarice, and it swings to times when you're living in poverty. But and I don't want to threaten the wealthy by saying that the poor will absolutely lose their mind and become militant and, jump over the fences and take people over. But it does happen.
I mean,
If
history's
you,
pretty clear.
if you do force people to live in the state of nature, then the laws that are the state of nature become the laws of society. You're no longer protected by the laws of morality. You're subject to the laws you're living by. You can live a very good life in the state of nature, right? You can be the top dog. You can acquire a lot, but eventually you're not the top dog anymore. And again, how far do you want to fall? Do you want to be comfortable in your life, or do you want to live in absolute, lavish surroundings and then pay for it later? That I think I urge people to read up on the social contract. My friend Daryl says that all I say is social contract, and he sort of makes fun of me. But I have a friend named Daryl Leary who's quite a profound thinker. He's a disabled man as well. And he can see things in ways that other people can't, and I think it should be clear to everybody what's going to happen, and we can see what is happening. And the failure of the social contract is working its way up. Those that can't afford rent that are in the middle class, it's because the government didn't invest in the social contract. They didn't build enough houses. They didn't create regulations that stop people like Blackstone from buying up affordable properties. That didn't stop bed and breakfast from taking over what was left of the affordable housing. So when you don't live by the social contract, you die by the law, state of nature, I guess. So
No,
is that okay? Yeah.
that's a
Okay.
very good way to put it.
Yeah, I hope so. I still think I'm like flighty as heck, but I'm doing my best.
No, I think
Yeah.
you're doing just fine, sir.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about the provincial budget. So, like,
Okay.
with previous provincial budgets, we've seen that one of the areas, and I think I'm cautious, we may be about to say some not negative things about the UCP and the provincial government. So this is like, I don't know this territory so well. But what's your reaction to the provincial budget, to disability supports for things like ACE and that kind of thing?
Well, as a disabled person, I really can't complain about the budget for the disabled community. We wanted indexing returned. They returned indexing. We wanted the payment date changed back. They changed the payment date back. They didn't really talk to us about it. They just went ahead and did it. And that's fine. I'm cool with that. And if they and they're saying they're not going to claw back the Canadian disability benefit, that's great, As far as the other things in the budget go, like education, I don't want to see Alberta's education going from a world leader that's being, touted in other countries and our curriculum being shared to being the last in Canada. That's not good for the citizens of the province. And eventually, it's not good for the businesses of the province because you want an educated workforce. And speaking about the workforce, you also want a healthy workforce. So, healthcare is the other thing you can't spend enough money on, like education and healthcare. Reap the benefits. You can be cheap in everything. You can be cheap in putting shingles on your roof, but what are you going to cost yourself, 20 years down the line? You're going to have a basement full of water, and it didn't come from the basement. You want to see governments properly invest in their society and not be cheap for the sake of being cheap. You'll erode society to the point that people can't afford houses and then they can't afford taxes. So you're doing yourself in, but you're living quarter to quarter and you're trying to impress people with rhetoric. And this is the problem with polarized governments, is you push yourself back into a corner where you're trying to live by your rhetoric. You criticize the other side for spending money, and then you can't spend money on the things that people need. So healthcare, education, very important subjects that need to be funded more appropriately. A number of other things. Children's welfare really needs to be improved, especially the disabled children. I can think of a number of things. Alberta used to have the best roads. You could tell when you arrived in Alberta from BC, because the roads went from the surface of the moon to like driving across the top of a glass table. That's no longer the case. We do have an Alberta advantage. We've had this blessing of oil, and it's been a profound blessing, but we're not using it as a gift. We're using it to prop ourselves up. And, perhaps we need it, and people are going to hate me for this, but perhaps we do need a PST to bring stability to our province so we're not boom and bust all the time. It doesn't have to be a large PST. But Leahy's plan was to save our revenue for a rainy future. Leahy saw that it wasn't going to last forever. And I've been told that Norway used Leahy's plan to succeed. And if that's the truth, then look at how well they've done for themselves by just sticking to his plan. I think we stepped off the path and we treated the oil revenue as found money instead of something that we should have been banking. People often will say that the government should run their affairs like a household does. Not necessarily true, but if we did say it was true, every person doesn't take their paycheck and spend the whole thing. They don't just say, okay, I've got this, and this is, I'm going to make this my budget, and this is all I'm going to spend, and it's all going to be gone. They do invest in the things that need to be fixed. Like if they've got a leaky roof, they fix it right away. They don't say, I cannot afford to the things that have to be done, but at the same time, they try to sock money away. So I think my answer was a little bit all over the place, but I hope my point came across.
No, I
But
think it was good, and I think that it is important to highlight. I mean, I'm kind of conflicted as somebody who has absolutely no skin in the game when it comes to supports for the disabled. But I mean, you listed off, we wanted it re-indexed, and they re-indexed, and we wanted the payment dates fixed, and they fixed the payment dates. And I don't want to diminish that they did those things. Because good for them for doing the right thing, but at the same time, they're the ones who broke.
Took it away, They're the ones that took it away in the first place. Well, I try not to say anything bad about anybody, because I'm a representative of the disabled community. I can't lose my cool. I can't be mad at anybody. I have to do my best for the people that are down and out, and they don't get a lot of attention. They don't get a lot of care. They rely on people's empathy and their altruistic motives. I think Kenny wasn't a person that had altruistic feelings for anybody but himself. Or he doesn't really appreciate what it's like to be down and out. He doesn't really appreciate what it's like to be different. And we've seen by his conduct in the past that he's hurt people, even people that are in his own community, if it's for his advantage. Now, appointing Jason Nixon does have some negative context to it, because of his history, the man might be judged upon that quite harshly. Perhaps he's angry because the way that his reputation has gone, or perhaps he has to act like a tough guy now because of the reputation he has. But as far as it goes for the disabled community, they've sort of reversed what Kenny did. So that's a good thing. Now, as far as the Canadian disability benefit goes, if he keeps doing good, then great. But if he does bad, no, look out. I'm going to be upset. And yeah, I'm sure he's terrified, but so is the rest of the disabled community, and so will the rest of Canada. I don't think he's going to claw it back. I really don't.
I hope not.
Well, it would just be an abysmal, immoral thing to do. Why would he? His father did start the mustard seed for whatever reason, and his brother Jeremy is a good guy and likes to try to do his best for people. Of course, When you're in the public eye, everything you do gets magnified. So, like you say, I'd like to give them a break and just talk to them and see the way things are going. And I'm a disability advocate. I take care of the disabled community. If I was an education advocate, I might be very angry. But right now, the disabled community, we're doing, can't say okay, I gotta say mediocre. But as far as the disabled communities is going, things are looking up for us, you know, especially with Canadian Disability Benefit. I'd like to tell the federal government to fund that right away and not to wait till 2025. If you wait to 2025, it starts to look specious, like, why are we doing this? You know, you're getting pretty close to an election. And like I say, that benefit was may have been created with charitable intentions. But since it was created, rent in Edmonton has gone up, I believe, 26%. You know, food inflation has gone up. Calgary, I think, is 46%. Am I right there on how much rent has gone up?
I mean, I know how much I'm just in the process of doing my mortgage renewal, and I know how much the payments are going to increase. So I would not be at all surprised to hear 20 to 30 to 40% for rent.
So what was a charitable and altruistic benefit has become, like I say, a crisis benefit. I would like to see Mr. Nixon's office meet with Disability Without Poverty because there's some profoundly good people in that organization that really know what they're talking about. They've created statistics, they've got booklets to hand out, they've got a lot of information, and I'd like to see more of a unified effort between provinces, the MLAs and the MPs and the federal government, and to really reach across without propagandizing the benefit. I just want to see it now, if that's okay to say.
No, I think that's entirely okay to say.
Okay.
Are there any other issues or concerns that you want to make sure get on people's radar?
Okay. Well, I want people to know that it's rumored that the Canadian Disability Benefit will be the one of the qualifiers will be the Canadian Disability Tax Credit. That's how the government's going to identify those that are disabled that are in need of the benefit. Now, I'd like to see the CPPD used as well as an identifier or qualifier. And I'd like to see the provincial programs form a database that they can provide to the federal government to say this is our disabled community, but I don't know what the privacy issues are right now. I want to see the Canadian Disability Benefit based on the GIS and not be a credit. I want to see it be paid out as a benefit. Starting at in Alberta, it would be $20,200 or something like that is what people on AISH get. Sorry, my math isn't great right now, but so and it slowly diminishes for the disabled people that are doing better, like those disabled people that can work one day a week or something like that would get a little bit less. I think a GIS is fair as it's an equal standard applied across the nation. No province is going to say why are they getting more than we are. You know, every disabled person will get the benefit and reap the benefit. I'd like to see the benefit be at least $500 a month. The PBO released three reports on the costs. One was $20 billion, one was $2 billion, and one was $1.7 billion. I don't suspect that we're going to get the $20 billion a year option. It's probably going to be closer to $2 billion a year. But if it's 2 billion, then that's probably about $200 a month for every disabled person that truly qualifies for that benefit. And $200 is $200 basket of food isn't very much. It's like a shopping cart. But you know, a shopping cart full of food feeds you for 2 weeks. It feeds you healthy food for 2 weeks. So I've got little notes in front of me here. You'll have to forgive me. Usually I've got
Oh.
a pretty good brain. I'm probably apologizing too much for my brain, but I had COVID in December, and combined with my cancer, I'm just sort of, I know I'm talking, but I don't really feel like my brain's in gear. So you'll have to forgive me if I'm a little bit weary of what's coming out of my mouth. So,
Yeah, definitely apologize, sir.
yeah. Like I was saying earlier, these are just notes I'm going to read through. when the government says cannot afford, then that trickles down through the community. It causes everybody else to say, I cannot afford. So it's important that the government starts investing in Canada and communities. Like, the worst thing that we cannot afford is to say we cannot afford to have immigrants that are their lives are in peril, and we cannot afford to allow them into the nation. And people that are in despair and vulnerable start saying, they become a demographic and they start saying, well, we can't have immigration because then we're already hurting and then we get hurt more. And no demographic should be forced to think of another demographic as the other when all those demographics are vulnerable. They shouldn't be forced to fight over resources. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about. The other thing I wanted to mention again, and I may be restating a lot of these things, is MLA's office is saying to those from advocacy groups, the Canadian Disability Benefit is a federal issue. We don't really want to talk about it because there's disabled people in every MLA's riding, and this benefit is going to be directed at those people. And the information that we garner first are the rumors that we hear. We have to be able to pass that on to the MLAs. For example, if the Canadian tax credit becomes the qualifier, then the disabled community has to start applying for that. Doctors aren't going to like snap to in one day and fill out 2,000 applications for every disabled person in their riding, you know. So that's something that has to be communicated to the MLA so that they can help their disabled constituents. Just reading, Larry. I keep doing this. Again,
Can I jump in for a quick sec, Don? Because I
sure.
want to address
Yeah.
this topic right out of the gates here, because this
Okay.
to me is fundamentally one of the flaws in the conversations that occurs with people with a variety of different challenges, whether it's disability or language barriers or cultural barriers or. It is incumbent on the people who are trying to show up for the conversations to be willing to have those conversations in the ways that they can be had. So
Yeah.
please, sir, do not feel bad about the fact that you're navigating brain fog secondary to
Okay.
COVID and secondary to cancer.
Yeah.
I am here to have this conversation, however this conversation needs to be had. And
Okay.
I'm going to ask the same thing from our audience for this episode. So please do not feel bad.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Because one of the things about going through an illness is you start to realize what's being taken away from you. You know, my intellect is starting to be taken away from me. And as a representative of the community, that bothers me because I want to be a good representative. So if I'm apologizing, it's probably a bit of trying to prop myself up and maybe make a little bit of an excuse for myself. So, but I am glad that you said that so people can understand. So thank you for that. Can I keep reading my notes?
You
Is that okay? All right.
absolutely.
You know, one of the things that my friend Daryl Leary said to me is that you cannot fully support the idea of inclusion if you're quick to ostracize. And I'd like the parties to accept every person that comes to them, especially people with disabilities, because people with disabilities may not be able to present themselves very well, you know, and it's important that even advocates, other people in the disabled community, be very patient with those that express frustration. Some people can't keep a cap on it all the time. They'll get very angry. God knows I've faced some of the anger from people that I can't help right away. You know, they just blast me. I was going to say about Daryl that he's a very religious and kind man, but he said he'd kill me if I said that, so I won't. He's actually a determinist. He believes in determinism. I did want to talk a little bit about the politics. I saw every interview that you did with politicians. I don't think Nishi should try to be funny because talking about puppies and children, I want to like Nishi. I think he's the best leader that's possible for the NDP, strategically speaking. I think Miss Bancioli is also another really good candidate. So I think that the NDP is going to have a good crop of people to choose from. I'd like to see David Shepherd. Oh, and a call out to Claire with the NDP. She's been profoundly kind, and I really wanted to thank her. Just looking through my notes. Sorry about that, Nate.
All good, sir.
Yeah, I think I've covered everything. I didn't really need my notes, so I don't know why I read them. And I'm glad my cat's not meowing in my ear anymore and distracting me. So, what topics would you like to speak about? And I'll do my best to answer them.
I think we've pretty much covered, like, the big ones that I wanted to talk about were the impact of the provincial budget for the disabled community. And then I know that you wanted to talk about the Canadian disability benefit and the importance of that, as well as the carbon tax, and just trying to get people to think about the notion that just because you're not directly benefiting from a thing doesn't mean the thing is bad,
Well,
because
it
there
doesn't
may be
mean,
other people who need it more, who are benefiting.
yeah, it also doesn't mean that you're going to benefit from it sight unseen. There, you are reaping the benefits of a healthier society. I know I talk in Wetaskiwin quite a bit just to see how people in the rural areas are feeling about things. And they're having their issues with the homeless community and the homeless shelter. I don't know if you're aware of that. The community doesn't want the homeless shelter, and it's NIMBYism being displayed. So, but where are people supposed to go? The best way to deal with the homeless situation is not to create homeless people in the first place. So, anyway, I'd like you to ask me questions, just to ensure that I provide the answers that I can, because I did again want to return to the Canadian Disability Benefit, and forgive me if I'm being redundant, but disability without poverty is working very hard to see that benefit realized. It needs to come sooner or later. It's got to be funded no later than this fall. It's people are in crisis. Disabled people are starting to talk about MAID. I don't want to see disabled people starting to consider, cashing out because they can't make it through life.
Who are the organizations? I'll give you this question, and then I think I might have run out of topics, sir. But
No, okay, sorry.
that's all good. But who would you suggest? If somebody's listening to this podcast or this, they're watching this episode, and they're like, "Oh, that does sound like it's kind of important." Who should the average Joe or Jane Albertan reach out to say, "No, this actually really does sound like it's quite important. Can we maybe get some eyes on this and see if we can accelerate this?" Who should people be reaching out to? Who should people be writing to?
Well, they should be writing to their MPs and trying to push them along. As we've seen, the government does re respond when there's a high number of people, putting pressure on them. We saw how quick they were with SERP because there was a large number of people that were affected. The disabled community is pretty humble, and so they've got to make a lot of noise. As far as organizations go, there's the March of Dimes. There's Disability Without Poverty, which I'm a member of. There's Voice of Albertans with Disabilities, great organization. That's just absolutely wonderful. There is one organization that I'd like to take a moment to mention that's supportive of the disabled community because it helps take care of disabled persons' pets. It doesn't charge them any money for veterinary services. And that's Alberta Helping Animals. If people wanted to give $10 to them, I know I shouldn't be asking for money. That's bad of me. I'm sorry. But
You're not asking money for yourself. You're asking for an organization.
no, yeah. If
Okay.
the provincial government wanted to give them a grant, that would be wonderful because they have so many profoundly good people working in that office that are working probably not for much, that are helping the disabled community by taking care of their pets. And when you're a disabled person and you're isolated and you're alone and you're shut in, nobody becomes more family than your pet. And when you lose your pet, it is absolutely heartbreaking. And so even organizations like Alberta Helping Animals really provide beautiful, beautiful sentiments and help for the disabled community. So again, March of Dimes, Disability Without Poverty, VAD, and even Alberta Helping Animals. So, and any other questions at all?
No, I think that covers everything.
Okay. Well, I'll try to have a nicer sheet behind me next time, maybe something with a brick pattern on it. I will shut my cat in another room next time, so
No,
he doesn't meow through the,
I think your cat contributed a lot to the conversation.
Oh, did he? He's a better singer than I am. So as
Yeah.
you heard me sing away at the beginning of this interview, he can certainly carry a good tune. And as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Nate. And I do appreciate your comments. I do feel a little bit brain weary, and I hope others will step up as we go along. I really do want to see this federal benefit funded this fall because I really appreciate how necessary it is. I'm hoping that the MLAs that listen to this will, talk to their counterparts. In Alberta, it's the NDP can speak to the NDP party federally, and the UCP can talk to the Conservatives. Pressure can be applied. And as I've said, it's an altruistic benefit. So be altruistic. Just fund it now. All of Canada wants to see it. It has broad support across all political parties. Nobody is objecting to this. So just get it done. And we'll leave it there. Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
I try to be open-minded, but not so open-minded that my brains fall out.
Rule.
There you go.
Well, Don, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Okay.
And I really do just want to reiterate. I think it is one of the great misunderstandings that exists when people interact with groups that have different communication needs than what they're used to is they try to get everybody to do things on their terms. And certainly one of the things that I've learned in the 6 years of having conversations on this show is that if I try to demand that everybody interacts the way that I like to interact, it would be a very, very lonely show. And so I think it's critically important that people recognize that if you're talking to a member of a different community than your own, sometimes, yeah, you might have to really let that conversation breathe a little bit, and you may have to exercise a little bit of patience, heaven forbid. But it's critically important that we do that, because even though you have your brain fog, that in no way diminishes the importance of the things that you're trying to bring to the forefront. And to for anybody to not allow themselves access to the people who have the lived experience with the disabilities, with the obstacles and the challenges that people living with disabilities face, just because, oh, they're not talking the way that I'd like them to, is really short-sighted. So please, sir, do not feel bad about
Okay, well, thank you for that.
anything.
You sort of prompted an idea there. I think it is so important for people to be able to communicate like they used to be able to communicate maturely and not be offended by another person's point of view. If we can't understand each other, then we just will have two demographics in every society. There'll be those on that side and those on that side, and we'll all treat each other like the other. We'll just like hold up our little cross, and I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to get angry at the first thing that comes out of your mouth, and that really shuts down that mature communication that we need in our society. I don't know if I'm pointing at any fingers by saying that. I hope not,
I
but
don't think so.
I think our society has become very divided, and we need to really speak to each other, be patient with each other, love thy neighbor sort of ideology. Mankind has been around for a long time. And, 3,000 years ago, they didn't have TVs, they didn't have books. So they sat around thinking about what's the best way to live our life? And they came up with the golden rule, and they came up with all sorts of ways to get along with your neighbor, and we're losing that. We're becoming militant, we're becoming uninformed. And one of the best ways to be informed is just to sincerely be interested in what another person has to say.
100%.
Okay.
Thank
Yeah,
you
do you
so much,
want
sir.
to? Okay, you're welcome.
All
Have a
right.
nice day, Nate. You take care of yourself.
You as well.
And that's it for another episode of The Breakdown. As always, if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here, we would love nothing more than if you thought about signing up to be one of our Patreon sponsors at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab, where for just the price of a fancy cup of coffee a month, you can help us continue to produce this kind of content. Whether you're listening to the audio version of the podcast, in which case, maybe leave a review and a rating, or whether you're watching it on one of our streaming platforms, we want to say a big thank you to everybody who is part of The Breakdown's audience. And as always, take care of each other and keep the conversation going.